Scott.
I'm Russell.
I'm Leo. This is Spitball. Welcome to Spitball, the Pitchin Kitchen, where three digital dreamers, that's us, empty our heads of startup and tech product ideas that we have stuck up in there so you can all have them for free. Anything that we say is yours to keep. And Scott, you brought our guest this week, right?
I did. I actually brought my boss and longtime friend, Kyle.
Oh, that's awkward.
Kyle's an electrical engineer. He's the manager of my team. He's always coming up with cool hardware designs and ideas, and I think he would be perfect for this. So welcome, Kyle.
Welcome, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're so glad you're here. This is going to be fun. We are starting off today with another This or That game. So today we're going to be playing Array of Tongues. I don't know if you know this. There's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of languages, world languages around the world. Some of them are pretty obscure. You definitely have not heard of most of them. And that goes for both like spoken or written language as well as programming languages. So I'm going to go down the line here one at a time, and you have to tell me if something is either a world language that somebody speaks or writes, or if it's a programming language that someone writes code in for a computer. And Kyle, we got to start with you, our guest, of course. Tell me, starting off here, we've got Velato, V-E-L-A-T-O. Is that a programming language or a world language?
That one sounds like a world language from like some obscure island.
It does. It's actually a MIDI music file language where you can define pitches and orders of notes.
Every single one of these games, Leo, I'm like, I'm going to be good at this. I will get this. I know this stuff. And I get it wrong 100%.
Not yet. Russell, Kusunda, K-U-S-U-N-D-A.
That's a world language.
It's a language spoken in Nepal. Very good. Very few fluent speakers left. Scott, Wintu, W-I-N-T-U.
I'm going to say a world language.
Yeah, it's native to Northern California. Very good.
Northern California?
Descendants left. Yeah. Wow. Kyle, you're next up. Malbolge, M-A-L-B-O-L-G-E.
All right. That's got to be another computer language.
It is. Nice. It's a language designed from the ground up to be almost impossible to write in. Well done. I believe it's one all. Yeah, it's just difficult to program in. It's like really ugly and bad. You should check out Malbolge. It's funny. Russell, Piet, P-I-E-T.
Computer language.
It is. It's a programming language where programs are supposed to look like abstract paintings and the code's colored blocks. Of course. Scott, Votic, V-O-T-I-C.
I'm going to say language, but like from Star Trek.
They are all actually on Earth, I will tell you that.
Okay.
Either in a computer, or no sci-fi in here this week.
Still language.
It's a Uralic language spoken in Estonia. Very good. Last time through, one more round.
Here we go.
I believe it's 1-2-2.
You're
on a hot streak. Kyle, we've got Sentinel, S-E-N-T-I-N-E-L.
All right, that's got to be a computer language.
Spoken by the inhabitants of North Sentinel Island in the Indian Ocean.
Wow.
Largely uncontacted, so you're not you're forgiven for not knowing that. Russell, Rotokas, R-O-T-O-K-A-S.
That's the way you said it.
Or Rotokas? Yeah. Rotokas? I haven't looked up how to pronounce any of these.
We apologize.
So that's an island out in the middle of the Pacific, called Roto, same where Roto-Rooter is from. So it's definitely a spoken language.
Are you making this up?
What? One more time, the name of the place again, so I can look that up.
Roto.
it's spoken in Papua New Guinea. Very good.
Same diff.
Nice. You pretty much so
got it. You're actually like right on it, because that's like the descendants of New Zealand are Rotorurans or something like that.
I made up a story just like I make up my ideas. It's just how it is.
The Maori? Is that what? Yeah.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah. And then Scott, Dumi, D-U-M-I. Finish strong for us.
I'm going to finish strong with complete guess. I'm going to say programming language.
That was the language of Nepal, another obscure one in the mountains. Sorry to say. I believe it was 1 Kyle, Scott, 2 Russell, 3 our winner this week.
Nice, Russell.
Yeah, let's go. I never win these. Gonna remember this the whole episode, by the way. I'm just gonna hold it over.
Keep bringing it up. Yeah.
As winner of the
I'm so distracted.
the glow of the win.
Yeah, you're
the high of victory.
Your trophy is 3D printing in the basement right now.
All right, Leo, what are you bringing to the table today?
Okay, so I don't know if you've ever interacted with a kid, maybe a nephew or niece, or you've got your own kids, or you've got some neighbor or something, and they ask about when something's going to happen. When are we going to leave? When is this? How long do I have to wait for that? And you say, I don't know, 15 minutes. The kid says, how long is that? How do you even explain to – everyone has their own system for like – it's 1.5 Paw Patrols, or it's, you know, you're going to have to count to 60, 15 times. Like any kid's little brain can fathom what that could even mean, right? I would love to build a piece of hardware for this. Maybe it's smart speaker controlled. Maybe it's app controlled. I don't know. But it's got a bar of LEDs, maybe an LED matrix, where it visualizes a countdown timer. Google Assistant kind of does this with smart displays, and there's like some shoddy websites out there, but I can't find an actual dedicated hardware product to show time remaining, a countdown timer of some kind. And I know that I would use this constantly. So you just say, here's my 15-minute timer, and it animates with progress bar style or circle filling up style to just show here's, you can see the fading going on and the time running out, kind of like, you know, a sand timer, but something a little bit more flexible with how much time is left. That's the whole pitch. Some kind of LED matrix.
Love it. So something I'm picturing, like those things that you get at restaurants where they're like, hey, we got a 45-minute wait, go away, hold this piece of hardware, but something that they can physically hold in their hands, the kid, and that something is changing on it so they can see or at least have a very clear idea of when time is going to be up.
Yeah, maybe the time, like the full amount of the progress bar is 30 minutes or something. And then you say, oh, 20 minutes. So you set it to 2/3 full and they just expect, okay, now I can visualize how much time is going by. I'm from the generation where every classroom that I was in growing up had an analog clock. And so when someone says that's 45 minutes from now, I just feel how much progress that is of a minute hand moving, right?
It's been ingrained intuitively,
but I feel like that's something that little kids can do too. And you could try to teach analog clocks to a 3-year-old. I don't know if they'd really get it, you know?
Yeah, that reminds me of that game where the timer and you try to have to hit it at the 10-second mark exactly to the millisecond. Ooh. Play that game 100 times and it'll be 15 minutes, right? Like,
sure.
I think it's like, I never realized how hard it is for like a little kid to understand time because it's so slow for them, I feel like. And so, I don't know, like games or like, right, a fun animation. That's really interesting. Like, yeah. I think there's like an entertainment element. Like they have to feel like time moving faster. And I feel like if they were to watch paint dry or seconds on a clock, Ooh. It's just like, this is so long, right? It's going to feel like an hour and a half to them. So how do you make it like move? Because in a way, like it sounds like you wanted it to move fast for them, right? In general.
Yeah, for sure.
So like as it gets closer and closer to the time, the end time, it'll pulse or pulse faster or something interesting.
Yeah, like it starts changing colors, like red, then yellow, then green, finally. Yeah. I feel like this could come in handy at restaurants too. You know, I'm one of the types that gets really hangry. And so if they handed me this little restaurant buzzer that starts counting down at 20 minutes, I can just like watch this and say like, all right, there's only like two more little dots left here. I can hold out that much longer, but I'm just like absolutely standing there waiting for this thing to buzz. I'm just like staring at my phone, like, come on, come on, come on. And it never comes.
Even if I love that
restaurant buzzer where that indicates your place in line is a brilliant idea that also needs a pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have to tell you the exact time, just how many people are before you and let you defer it. Then it gives the restaurants, you know, plausible deniability of, well, we don't know the exact time that it's going to be, but there's four parties ahead of you.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And yeah. I know that this is kind of being supplanted by like text message systems and stuff, but not everyone uses those.
Guys, it's like the Domino's pizza tracker, right? They don't really give you the time. Like they give you a rough time, but like, you're kind of like, whoa, the pizza is in the oven right now. And there's just something exciting about that, right?
Dude. So instead of saying Derek is making your pizza, your buzzer would say the Smith family is finishing up dessert.
Oh, man.
That's my table.
speed them up, you know, and you start pressing the button and it's like throwing like napkins at them or something in real time.
Oh, there you go. You can turn this into like a microtransaction. You spend a dollar and the waiter is going to come over and give them a nasty look.
There you go.
$10 and they pour water on their lap or something.
Right. It's like Disney's Fast Pass, but malicious.
Okay, if you were having dinner and somebody was like throwing dollars at you to leave, like, would you like?
I'd stay. I mean, yeah, right.
Oh, man.
It's like the airline booth when you're waiting. Maybe 200 bucks will get you to wait. Maybe 300. You just stay at the table and they're throwing money at you. This is a reverse incentive.
I guess you're right.
It would backfire so quick, but what a social experiment that would be.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'll leave right now for 50.
There, yeah.
Bids. I want to go back to the MVP of this, though. If you had, so timers like this for kids on here.
Oh, yes.
I want to do one for like, hey, this is how long it is till Christmas. And it's just like, you know, it's months of timer on there, but it gives them a day by day or week by month. How many more wake ups until it's Christmas time or some their birthday, some big event?
Ooh. Yeah, we do this with paper rings. So we'll make like a long chain and every day we take one down kind of thing.
Oh, but nice.
Something a little bit more digital, reusable, something could be cool.
Hardware.
Too.
Dude, like a 15-minute advent calendar type of thing that's like reusable and doable, like, right? Like, oh, every minute this box will drop something, or I don't know what fun activity would fall out of there, or, you know, that would be cool. Then they get to play with 15 different toys in 15 minutes. Like, that's going to make time fly.
They're still playing with it, but they have the excitement that something new is still going to drop.
It's like the, what's that one dog feeder? The Furbo dog feeder.
It drops a Tic Tac every couple minutes.
What color is it going to be this time? Or maybe it's a Skittle. We're going to have to wait one more minute.
One more Skittle.
Mom, how much time till dinner? Huh? Set the thing.
My dog is so food motivated. We could probably teach him time, like how time works, just by dropping a treat every 5 minutes or 15 minutes or something.
Regular intervals, yeah.
Whoa. I'm going to be gone for 15 treats. It's okay.
Oh, 15 treats? Really? Like, yes.
He's just happy. Yeah.
You're leaving. Yeah, right. Yeah, I came to this with a half-baked idea here. I don't have a clear vision yet for what the physical animations and product and stuff itself looks like. But
I think we're selling the restaurants now is what it is.
So I think a friend of mine actually made one of these.
Yeah.
Because he had a similar problem. Like, kid wanted to get out of bed and go run around and play. He's like, no, you have to stay in bed until 6 a.m. or, you know, some like bonkers early hour here. But it's a kid, so he like, wants to get up and go run around and do whatever. So he had this like little clock that you set a timer. And then once the timer turns green, you're allowed to get out of your bed and go play in your room. And then once it turns blue, now you can leave the room. And so it kind of just gave him a good set of rules, some boundaries there to go through. And I don't know if he made that or if he found that somewhere to buy, but maybe they're available already.
We've got one, yeah. So there's one company that's productized it, but it's a timer based like at this time every day. It makes noises and does it. Yeah,
okay. So you can't like dynamically set it to give a 15-minute countdown or something.
Not to my knowledge. I could fire up the app and look, but I don't think so. I think it's more like every day at 5 a.m. it does this and 6 a.m. does that. That's a good idea. Maybe my whole request is just a feature request for this already existing product and company.
It's what 90% of our ideas are. It's fine.
The poor listeners out there are like, that already exists, idiot! We hear you. We see you. Post social media us and tell us about what dummies we are.
Okay, wait. Another way to think about this too. Music. You throw like, here's four songs, just super quick software, right? I need 15 minutes on the clock and it finds, you know, a bunch of kid friendly songs or whatever. Boom. Once you're done with these songs, we're ready to go.
I
and
like
it has
that.
The like three songs in the lineup. It shows them and then they go away as they play. So you can see, oh, looks like there's only two songs left. I can see that. Yeah.
Oh, I really like that.
Yeah. Nursery songs, you know, are always like a couple minutes long. I mean, seven of them, maybe. Like, hopefully they can party through it.
Freebird, 10 times in a row.
It's
go.
A full concert kids for them, right? Like,
That's great.
That's really good.
You could turn it into a game too, where, you know, if you played like WarioWare, where it was just a whole series of like 20-second mini games, right? And so if you set that up to say, I need 15 minutes worth of mini games, and then now the kid can play all these things. And you could even like make it educational right now. All of a sudden it's like you solve 15 minutes worth of math problems or whatever.
I love that. Yeah.
Whoa.
Making it interactive is a great idea.
Like Bop It, but the timer countdown, you know, like.
How many more times do I have to pull it, Mom, before dinner's ready?
I'm tired of this, Grandpa.
That's bloop. Yeah, I know.
Pass it.
We're aging ourselves. I think this is like a very much like
our half-assed memories of what the Bop It Zoomers sounds are.
What the hell?
What's a Bop It? Is it like Cookie Clicker? You know, so stupid.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Gen Z.
I feel like we apologize to them every episode.
Yeah, but they're the future rulers of the world, right? So we gotta be kind to them, I guess. But you know,
I for one welcome our Zoomer overlords.
Yeah, help us fix the economy. I guess is whatever, you know, whatever's going on here. So that'll be another couple years.
Millennials are in their 20s and early 30s. We've already given up and said you guys can have it. It's over for us.
Yeah.
All right, Scott, what do you got for us this week?
I think I'm going to deviate from the usual hardware and go into more of a corporate espionage. So
software.
Kyle and I, our company contracts our employees to other companies in the local area. At one point, one of our contractors left our company for another company. It happens all the time. However, this contractor, since they left, has been still throwing business our way from the new company. So, for example, if the new company needed specific help contracting on a project, this employee would encourage the new company to throw work back to us, which I found fascinating. So my question slash idea is today, could you make a business out of this? Could you take a covert group of individuals who were purposely hired to other companies, but their loyalties still remain with the original parent company, whose sole purpose was to throw business back to the parent company?
Mm.
That's about as far as I got. And then I got into a really legal gray area.
Like Stephen Elop. There was a high ranking Microsoft executive. He was like just under the CEO, I think. And in the mid 20 teens, he went over and became the CEO of Nokia, I think it was. Yeah, he went over to Nokia, and then Nokia was doing worse and worse and worse and worse. And then he switched the whole company to be a Microsoft customer and make Windows phones because he came from Microsoft. And then they continued to not sell super well. And then he wrote this famous letter that was like, this is a burning oil platform and we all need to abandon ship. And then he sold the whole company to Microsoft and became a Microsoft executive again. He went to like Finland and just corporate shoehorned this whole massive like tent pole of a company in the industry, and just as they dwindled, he brought them back home. Yeah, it was crazy.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So was that actually like Microsoft's plan from the start? Because that's kind of where Scott's idea is going, right? Like Bill Gates tells them, you're out of here, go to Nokia,
Microsoft,
tank the company.
He's six steps ahead of us right now.
Balmer's in the back room, like, we've got a new plan for you, Steven. Yeah.
I guess, like, I don't know the business part yet. I think I'm going to get there, but the idea of just, like, as people are exit interviewing, like, listen, we're going to cut you a commission check for any sale that we do because of you. You're still, that way you're always kind of still in the network, still in the, like, just give them an incentive to sell your services, right?
You have to have the incentive there. At the same time, this truly becomes, like, spy versus spy. Like, it's you are moving to another company, you have a handler back at your original company that all your communication is coming to in and out of.
Exhibit A in the court case.
Interesting. So you're kind of working with a covert ops agent internally. So this is like, I think this is like a business culture shift. Like, all right, every employee that leaves is coming out as a salesperson. And that salesperson has access to the sales manager, right? And this is how they work, right? Like, this should, it's kind of like replacing your sales team with people. Like, as you churn at a company, large company, your churn becomes your sales pipeline. Like, that's, I mean, I feel like that should be, I don't know if I'm, maybe the people think this way already, but maybe not the, maybe not incentivized. I don't know.
Yeah, but if you do incentivize any company that has high turnover for whatever reasons, all of a sudden could make that high turnover work for them, profitable in some way. Although I guess if you have high turnover, people generally don't want to be loyal to their original company that they left in the first place.
Unless that's the plan from the start.
Yeah.
Your whole culture's around like, all right, bud, you really still, you love working here so much, we have a new idea for you.
Show your loyalty.
We will pay you under the table.
This is actually what Elon.
You're going to go apply for these jobs over here. We have these that will help you like write your resume and do everything. You're going to become this salesperson over here because we know that they need what our company provides.
Yeah. Hmm. Oh, yeah. Elon fired everybody at Twitter so that they could go work other jobs and sell more Twitter ads. That's totally this whole. This is.
That's been the plan from the beginning. Day one.
The 5D chess.
Yo, we're playing checkers. He's playing chess, right? He fired everybody for this sole reason, Scott.
I'm just stealing Elon's idea right here.
Right.
Yeah.
Their advertising revenue is down like 70-something.
It didn't work. It
didn't work. Nope.
It's a long-term play.
Everyone who left or was fired hated that new management.
Only on paper.
Next time.
I was just thinking now, like this idea actually kind of exists in like the medical world. So athletic trainers at colleges, high schools, those are all people who are salaried employees of like a local hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
That local hospital pays the athletic trainer to go and sit at high school football games and in high school workout rooms. And then when that person gets injured, they're like, hey, go to my local hospital. That's where I'm from. And you should go there. And so that's kind of how those
free?
Work.
Like, are they working there paid by the hospital or does the high school?
They're paid by the hospital. Yeah. And so
high school doesn't pay?
The high school pays in like an in-kind sponsorship. So when you see like local health center as the ad on the football stadium, that's usually where that's from.
Oh,
interesting. Okay. So this is kind of like that. But I think. Yeah.
Kind of.
It's, I guess what I'm thinking too, like, what if there's like a middleman construct, right? Like, to that end, like, is that employee getting a kickback for every patient, right? Like, they send their way. Like, they're straight hustling, like, somehow, maybe, but.
Commission based.
Commission. Yeah.
But I don't think the commission should come like, so how you would make a business out of this maybe is you're the middleman third party. So like this engineering firm, you know, hey, we can't technically give you a kickback for every sale, but this company that we partner with, if you like to sign up for, will give you a kickback for no apparent reason. Or something, you know?
That's a really good idea, Russell. All you need to do is find every person. You just scrape LinkedIn every day. And anytime someone changes jobs from one to another, reach out to them on LinkedIn and be like, look, I see you just moved jobs here. I see you have ties with your old company. If you can throw business to your old company, we will facilitate that somehow. And
yes, you're a facilitator. Of the deal, right?
Interesting.
The old company would pay the middleman to get business from the new company. Mm. Everyone wins. It's like a recruiter, but for business.
Yeah. Okay. This is some black hat. This is some black hat stuff now.
Yeah.
But I want to add, like, oh, this is going to sound terrible, but like, so... Yeah, after like an NDA, right, expires 3 years or whatever, there are some like methodologies that I think people would find valuable, right? Like at your previous job that I would say it's not like a trade secret. It's just like, you know, no. If you just knew which company we used, like third party company we used to supply, like we use a Uline for our packaging, but like some people are like, we go through local suppliers, you know, or something. Like if there was a way to facilitate those types of conversations without it being super sketchy, but it's like, I don't know, like
you reach out to the person, you've been here 3 years. You probably know a few things like this. Would you like us, yes or no, to contact the company and try to start that conversation for you? They don't have to know that that information is coming from you, but we can anonymously deliver the information from the employee under your care who's remaining anonymous to management to say, hey, your competitors do this.
They pay you for the tip.
It'll be probably be pretty obvious who's selling it. It's probably Derek who came from the other competitor.
But it doesn't matter. You got plausible deniability, and LinkedIn has all the information you could ever need for this based on people's employment history.
And I feel like this probably already happened. Like a consulting firm, like, probably reaches out to previous like employees about their use of certain systems. Like, how did you do this in your ERP? Oh, well, and it doesn't sound or feel like a corporate secret that you're spilling, right? But now you're just kind of socially engineering information out of past employees. So at least be a little transparent with it and give the, you know, like we are soliciting not secrets,
be totally upfront about it and pay them for their time.
It's more honest, I guess, than like, you know, yeah, sure, we're wearing black hats, but at least we show it, you know, instead of just like,
but we wear them proudly.
Yeah,
you're an arms dealer.
Yes, we sell illegal guns, but it's at least we tell people
trade secrets.
I just don't want to get incriminated. You come up with a tax fraud one, Scott. It's just
one
like,
episode,
it's
man.
It's always the nice guys that have all the super genius, evil genius ideas, right?
All right, Russell, what do you got today? What's your idea?
All right, so I feel like there's this problem where being tech gadget people, we like to buy expensive gadgets, and then we have this like wishful thinking and buyer's regret about our expensive gadget now. And one of those gadgets is drones, right? Like quadcopters. It's like so cool for the first maybe couple months you have it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, it sits in the garage a little too long or doesn't get used. And so why I'm hyping on drones is because I feel like there's a huge matching need for people that own a lot of drones that sit around to create maps like GIS, LiDAR maps of areas. Cities need it. Businesses need it. Roofers need it. Everybody needs a freaking drone shot, but they also like probably it's too expensive to like have a bunch of drones in your corporation for every person in your fleet. And so drones for hire is this idea where you get all the little people that kind of want drones to be the Uber drivers of drone footage, right? So you drop requests for mapped areas, you fly your drone, you capture the footage, you upload it, right? Rinse and repeat. At my current job, right, there's this huge need for like LiDAR mapping or just pictures of houses in the fall, because it's real, because once all the leaves are gone, all the tree canopy stuff, you can't take really good photos of houses until it's all the leaves are gone. And so we just need hundreds of drones to fly and capture footage of every possible region as quickly as possible. While that sliver of time in the season, right? So that's drones for hire. It's just like ad hoc hiring drone people to fill this giant need for maps at a drone level, right?
Lots of uses. So to clarify, you, the drone owner, you've bought this drone. It's sitting in your garage. You would be the one who would sign up for this app and be like, yeah, I can go fly my drone and get whatever footage you need. It's not just you handing your drone to someone else.
Correct. Yeah. You would you would be an Uber driver. That. Like you would maybe have to drive to a site, fly your drone, upload your map, move on, right?
Love that. Because you still get to fly the drone. That's the whole point. You got it.
Right. And you're now making, it's kind of like a revenue stream. It like breaks. So you have it for fun, but then you're also making money on it. It's just like owning a car, yeah. Right? It's, and then Uber driving or whatever. So, yeah, this a huge need. I think that's just DJI or whatever should just give drones out for free or like at a discounted rate and say, or like, what is it? Amazon does the Kindle with ads. You know, you just do something where you give out,
so gross.
You give out drones and you're like, all right, you can't use your drone until you've done 10 flights. You know, here's how you do it. Something like that.
You got to fly through this obstacle course and prove you're worthy of this service.
Or like,
then we just sell the obstacle course because it's fun.
Yeah.
that sounds fun. It just does. On its own. Like those drone racing companies, competitions that they have out in Vegas or whatever. My wife and I had a drone videography business when they were like still pretty clutch. We had a DJI one before they had cameras built in. So we had the model that you strapped a GoPro to basically. It was super great. My whole goal with it was like start an LLC, get just enough income to pay for the drone itself and the experiment, and then maybe I'll even stop. I don't know. But after about a year, we had done a couple of jobs for like a plastic injection molding company and stuff, got some video and stuff, made a few $100, paid for the drone itself. And then we were looking at this like vast chasm of we're going to have to get certified. There's going to be a bunch of new regulation. There's going to be like insurance to deal with and stuff because this is becoming legitimate now. Let's bounce. And we got out of it because there was such impending headache when it came to like all the paperwork and stuff. So if I could abstract all that out and say, hey, I need to hire a drone for this or whatever, it comes with a pilot who's insured, who's certified, who's done all this and knows exactly what I need. Or your platform maybe matches me to local pilots who have, you know, this one's better for like video. This one does LiDAR. This one goes around and I don't know, makes 3D maps of your farm or whatever you need. Then you're kind of making a marketplace there.
Right.
I think your revenue stream is going to be the insurance company at this point. Let's start a drone insurance company and then just have it as the baseline of this entire operation. You got to use our insurance for it. You know, $2 a month or whatever.
Well, could you, as that marketplace owner, incentivize the drone owners to sign up by saying, hey, we'll insure you? And then you can take a cut of whatever it is that they make from their rental to insure them.
That's a great idea.
And then maybe you have to go through some vetting process to make sure that they're not just going to crash their drone and call your insurance because they've never flown it before. You have to go through their obstacle course first, right? But yeah, maybe that's the play.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me think about like, right, like Toro or like every job you have to pay for insurance, right? Or something. So the insurance is that, I guess it makes, I didn't realize, right, when I start thinking about like the Uber model, everybody's already got insurance for their car. They've already got that stuff. So there's not really like this whole headache process when you buy, when you buy a car, you know what you're signing up for. But with drones, it sounds like it's a pain to get all your certifications and stuff, right? So maybe that's where the app comes in. Just getting more drone pilots, certified drone pilots. Yeah. Making all that easy.
I don't think the average person who's sitting in an office as an accountant or whatever may not even know what a drone could do to like part of this could be the sales pitch of, did you know that something that you're dealing with could be made a lot easier if some drone did it for 20 minutes? Like you could get some really cool videos of this or what are some of the other things that you wish you had drones for that you can't do?
A 3D model of my home.
Yeah, I could do seriously that. Though.
Right? Like, I don't know.
Surveying?
Surveying's a great one.
Yeah, I mean, roof inspections or something. Oh, I hate having to climb up on the roof, right? But to say, like, did that hailstorm damage my roof?
Ooh, or vice, like, what if a roof company just like, hey, fly a drone out. I'm going to sweep like 100 homes, I think, Kyle, is what you're saying. Like, I can look at 100 homes without sending a guy in a truck out there. And it hailed over here. Let me check like 100 roofs and then send my sales team to those 5 or 10 homes that probably had the most damage. Like 24-hour turnaround. That makes money for everybody, I think. So,
yeah.
I know like cities need this all the time for like flooding and flooding management, like topography, home insurance, right? I think when you get homeowners insurance, you could fly a drone. I mean, there's a ton of small individual uses that literally people in trucks have to go out and do that could just mm-hmm. instantly be replaced with Droober, drone Uber.
Droober. Droober.
That was off the cuff. That was drunk. It sounds like drunk Uber. Drunk Uber. need to work on the branding there.
Not to be confused with.
If this idea already exists, I have a way to make it not exist. If it does, you could. basically, what I'm trying to say is you throw some of that open street map thing, but this is all drone mapping, right?
Oh.
So you just create a whole new layer to open maps that's like high quality drone footage and is a layer. And maybe that's a thing. Is that a thing, Leo? You're the map guy. You know.
You could do satellite. They work with like Bing aerial satellite stuff, but there's no like local street view equivalent. That'd be awesome.
Like, yeah. Can you capture? I don't even know how legal this, maybe you guys don't know either. Like, can you capture legally other people's homes, like fly a drone and video it? I guess like the satellites do it. Why can't I fly my drone and do it? Right.
The street view truck does it. You can do it on public streets.
This is a thing. We should just create. Why don't we just make our own drone network and map the entire world from 100 feet off the ground, right? Or maybe a little higher. Like, what's the highest building? Just like a little bit higher.
What's the highest the FAA will allow us to fly?
There we go.
I think it's 400 meters, isn't it? Where airspace starts.
399. Maximum 400. That's our website. 399.com.
399.99.
Data is king, man.
But that could actually be really nice to do because, you know, some of those like miniature autonomous delivery robots that just like drive down people's sidewalks or on campuses, I don't know what they rely on right now, but I suspect it's like open street maps or satellite views, or they drive down with a camera on the front of them and then move around. But to have that aerial view mm-hmm. that's not quite so satellite based could be really good data for that kind of robotic application.
I looked, it's 400 feet, not 400 meters. I was close. Don't do 399. 400 meters with your drone and blame us. So then the drones dock on top of Amazon delivery trucks, and that's how they recharge.
Oh, God.
Wait, did we talk about this idea already or no?
Something like that.
Did you ever see that render of the like Hindenburg size blimp with the Amazon logo on it?
Right.
And it's like going over a town while Ride of the Valkyries is playing in the background.
Absolutely
and like
apocalyptic.
Thousands of drones are coming down, delivering packages and going back up to the mothership.
I need my crockpot now.
All right, I got to check something. How many square, like what if I paid $1 per square mile of land, right? So like, let's just create a bounty. We're going to map the entire United States. How many square miles in the U.S.? Okay, guess. Yes, this is actually like
square miles.
Programming language.
Square miles.
2.5 million.
800 million.
3.797 million. So just under 4 million. So you get a Sorry, Kyle. I just was like so excited. This is basically, you're saying like, all right, capture a square mile, send a bounty, right? Get a VC firm to say, all right, we're going to capture $100 per square mile. And you could just create entire companies. And now you have the most accurate map of the continental USA for 400, if you give $100 per square mile, $400 million.
I don't think you can fly over private land.
Why not?
I think you can be in public streets, but I don't think you can just go over someone's house. Or if you can, maybe they have the right to shoot you down. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
And we'll start selling equipment to shoot down drones.
This is why we need comments. This is why we need the listeners on the live stream.
You can't fly near airports either.
All right, then you skip over
those.
There's
no fly zones.
Save us some money. Just save our investors some money.
I like that, though. You increase the bounty for areas that people aren't likely to go. So out in the middle of the desert, no one wants to go there, but it's going to be 10 times the price as just flying down New York City or something.
Dude.
When Waze first started, every map on the whole map had little dots, and then your character was Pac-Maning them up to get you to drive over and map, like, where are these roads exactly? And a lot of the roads were either missing or wrong, but then when you went around, you were correcting the map for everyone else. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
It incentivized you to, like, gamify, you know. Same idea.
Yeah. I think we actually talked about this on the OpenStreetMaps thing that you had on the last one.
Maybe.
Just setting coordinates and people could set bounties, right? And then that, you know, I put, if you capture this square mile, I'll throw $10 in. And now it becomes like an ever-growing pot. And certain areas are like, if you map it, we got 100 contributors that would pay X amount of dollars to get this map on the map. And so we facilitate and take fees off of that, right? Like, just the accuracy of satellite data is just too
totally.
Yeah.
Russell, I have come so close in the last 12 months to buying a drone, and each time I talk myself out of it because I know it would, like you said, it would sit in a corner. But if I could scratch the itch by renting one a couple of times, I would be a customer. Absolutely.
See, we could also crowdsource a drone, Leo. All four of us here could just be part owners of a drone, right? Like. Always spitballing. ABS.
ABC. Always be spitballing.
Kyle, love to hear your idea.
Yeah, all right. So in my spare time here, I like to mess around with smart home equipment. So I've probably got a dozen or so different sensors floating around the house of one form or another, taking temperature, checking to make sure my sink's not leaking, so on and so forth. Leo, you're nodding your head. You're a smart home guy too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you can probably relate to this then. My dozen or so sensors have a dozen or so different types of batteries that they all take. So, and, you know, I've got AA's, AAA's, seven different types of coin cells all sitting in my house and all have to get changed every 6 months, a year, whatever it is that they are. And some of these are in hard to reach places too, you know, up in an attic, down in a crawl space, places you really don't want to go all that often. That's why you've got a sensor there to tell you if something goes wrong. So that's a big problem. One of the ways that companies are starting to account for this is they're really getting into like alternative energy and energy harvesting, right? So if you can take solar power and power all these smart home sensors, well, that's great. Now you don't ever have to change the batteries. One big thing that they're really starting to get into is RF harvesting. So it's using the Wi-Fi signals or Bluetooth in your house. It's just all this excess energy that's bouncing around your house all the time that you're not doing anything with. But these sensors can pick it up and just sit there churning, picking up this power, absorbing. And then once every 15 minutes or half an hour, they've got enough information or enough power now to turn on, take a temperature, spit it out over Wi-Fi, and go back to sleep. And then they just sit there for another 15, 20 minutes, picking up more energy. So as those start to come out, people are going to start, well, purchasing those because you never have to change batteries in those again, right? So that's just great. The challenge is that's going to create a whole ton of electronic waste because people are just going to go scrap these other pieces that they never want to change batteries again. So why would they? Plus, you got all these kids' toys too, right? Of other, lots of other things to take battery. So my idea is to use that same energy harvesting concept, but package that into the same form factor as a typical battery.
Oh, man.
And then you've got these batteries that never go bad. It's the last battery you ever buy. So you take six of these energy harvesting AAA size batteries, you slap them into your kid's RC car, and you don't have to worry about changing the batteries if they forget to turn it off, right? You can just drive this thing around. So now you've got this interim solution for smart home stuff, but you can also use this for any other battery application you need.
I
have always been fascinated by RF harvesting. Is it fringe science? Can you actually get enough to power a Wi-Fi radio or like matter or something low powered?
With patience, right? It all comes to how much data you need to send and how long you're willing to wait for that message to go across. But absolutely, it's probably like a 1 watt.
That's enough. Yeah.
Would be my guess for a typical broadcast of a typical wireless router. There you go. My router. Probably watt, 500 watts. I don't know what it is, but yeah.
If our intro to engineering class, it blew my mind when the professor took just like a wire, hooked it up to a headphone, and the wire was coiled as an inductor to the point that there was nothing powering the system. It was just a breadboard, but you could still put that headphone up to your ear and pick up the local FM radio or AM radio on there. And it was just, feeding energy from the air enough to power it so that you could actually hear something. That blew my mind that there's so much energy just floating around all the time.
Tinfoil.
There's stories of Brinkley. There was this huckster who lived, I think, in Texas or somewhere out south, who was broadcasting like snake oil commercials over the radio. And he had this pirate radio station that was way over the legal limits in the USA. So he moved right over to Mexico, and he had this like 1000 watt transmitter, something insane that was way, way more than it should have been. And people talked about in nearby towns, their bed springs would play the radio.
Oh my God.
They could hear it in like pots and pans and stuff.
So if I got a big, like, let's say I'm thinking of this as like an antenna, like if I got a bigger antenna, like, would it produce more power? Is that a thing? Like, if I bought a giant cover for the ceiling of my office, could I power or charge more with a bigger net, right?
Yeah, I don't think it has to do with the size of the antenna so much as it has to do with the power supply that's powering the antenna. So I think you need like a, 500 milliwatt antenna to actually get you, I don't know, FM radio. Throwing numbers out here. But if you have like a 1 watt, now suddenly you can go 17 times the distance.
Ah, okay. Okay. That makes sense. Because I was about to go big with that. That was real. I was like, whoa.
He was about to invent wireless extension cords.
I just want a way to never have to change the battery in my freaking fire alarm ever again. That's
your smoke detector. I bought new smoke detectors recently, and they had a sealed in lithium ion battery, and it made me angry that I went my whole life without having that. Because it just needs to stay charged for 10 years, and then they're not good anymore anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I know what you mean. Other things like that too.
Clocks. Right. Like changing a clock battery is like the worst.
I'm thinking remote controls right now. Like every remote or Roku or whatever, they would just have a self-charging battery. The power consumption on them is so minimal and so sporadic.
Yeah.
It would always be fully charged if it could just pick up AM whatever station on there and charge itself up.
Yeah, Xbox controller.
Xbox controller. That's a great
Never
one.
Have to charge that thing.
Especially when it like sits around all like for a whole day and doesn't do anything, right?
99% of the time, it's just chilling there until you press a button on it or something.
Totally. And smart home is the perfect application for this. You're totally right. With new protocols like Matter and stuff, a lot of them are really low power.
Yeah, because then you can toss sensors like literally into the wall and you can drywall over top. Man. And
just forget
you
about
have to
it.
Worry about it, right?
Your whole wall.
You were telling me that you put an accelerometer on your washing machine and had it text you if. The laundry, it stopped jiggling, so the laundry's done, and let you know. And I thought that was the most brilliant thing I've ever heard.
Hold on, I'm an Amazon Zigbee vibration sensor. Thank you very much, Kyle.
Kyle, I think you're saying, like, can I paint over, replace drywall, right? I just put a giant sticker on the wall, and now I could put devices all over the wall. Like
wallpaper's back,
like,
baby.
Yeah, like could you just like have a or like a toy. Let's say you make this into a kid's toy, right? Or something. You just have like a board, and all of a sudden whatever you put on the board is receiving power from like this wireless mat or whatever, and now you're just like creating it, like, it just is magic. It looks like magic. It acts like magic.
Yeah, you could absolutely do that. Actually, I saw a place. I was at CES back in 2021, and they had a really cool place there that had a transmitter box up in the corner of their room, and it was just blasting probably 5 watts of power. I don't know. It wasn't a ton, but it was enough to wirelessly charge every single different thing in their demonstration area. Wow. So they had like 3 or 4 different phones that had this little plug hooked in there that were receiving power from this. And now all of a sudden your phone just gets trickle charged all the time. Your tablets get trickle charged. Your TV can be powered through this little box that sits up in the corner. Now you're going to get on to, I'm sure, all sorts of like health concerns around.
I was just thinking that.
Power, am I X-raying myself every day?
Irradiating my body overnight.
But that's why I like your original idea, just because it's
already there.
Hey, we're using existing, you know, radio stations or existing 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi to trickle charge everything we possibly can.
Can I ask a naive question? If I had a bunch of these all over my house, would my Wi-Fi signal be down? Like, would I have less RF power penetrated through the walls and stuff because I'm taking that energy and using it?
I don't actually know. I don't think so, though.
Yeah, me either.
I mean, presumably, because the power does like bounce off of all these things. And so when it, now something is absorbing it, it will pick up some of that power. So maybe, but I don't know how many devices you'd have to do to like really make that affect you, really.
This is free energy in a way, right? Because other people are already paying for it, or like radio stations and all that stuff. So like,
yeah, or you're paying for it, right, by broadcasting your Wi-Fi signal out too.
Like a band.
So in a way, it's right. It just seems like if I put 100 batteries in my basement or like on my roof, right, could I just like trickle charge for as a generator? Like, all right, my power goes out once every 2 years, but when it does, I have been trickle charging.
From
the local radio station. I feel like solar is probably way more worth your time than the local radio station.
So, Leo. I guess that makes sense, right? Yeah.
Not to know about you. But.
Yeah, why would I even buy a device that I guess I could just buy a generator, right? It's just, yeah.
I want to jump back to the CES thing you were saying, Kyle. Like, were these like actual plugs that I put into devices to power them? Because what you described, I'm picturing like, so an Android or iPhone phone, something with that, I guess it's all USB-C now, a USB-C device that always is trickle charging that you have always plugged into the bottom of your phone. So your phone is always slowly trickle charging no matter where you go.
Yeah, that's basically the idea.
Based on local Wi-Fi or radio.
Yeah, so basically it's like, yeah, plugs in USB-C to your phone, and then it's just like this little circuit board that probably sticks to the back of the phone, would be my guess, or maybe it's the case. Mm-hmm. And then it just absorbs all that energy and transmits it into your phone as it needs
it. It's crazy that there's enough wattage to actually make that useful.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know what sort of wattage they were pumping out of that thing, but
needs to exist. This needs to exist.
There goes your potential sponsorship from Duracell, man. Never going to see a penny from them.
We'll go with a dollar store battery. That's more our speed. That's who's going to sponsor.
Well, thank you, Duracell, for listening. And thank you for listening, listener. We hope you enjoyed yourself this evening. And thank you, Kyle, for being here. This was lovely.
Yeah.
Thanks, I had a great time.
Our website is spitball.show. There you can find links to YouTube channel for all you Google Podcast refugees. Other social media is all on there, spitball.show. And email us feedback, comments, ideas, or podcast at spitball.show. That's also how you can follow us on the Fediverse, such as Mastodon and supposedly Instagram threads soon. We'll see. Just try to follow at podcast at spitball.show. Our subreddit is r/spitballshow. Our intro outro music is Swingers by Bonkers Beat Club. Please, if you wouldn't mind, open up that podcast app that you're listening to right now before the show ends in a couple of seconds and try to give us a 5-star review as fast as you possibly can. Subscribe, add, rate, whatever your button has, press it. We'd love that. It's the best way for people to find the show. New episode is coming out in 2 weeks. See you then.